Okay, today we are going to do Parshas Naso, and as we know, as we say every year, that the Shabbos after Shavuos is a special Shabbos and has a special name. And what's the special name for the Shabbos after Shavuos? It's called Shabbos Shelachar Shavuos. It's called the Shabbos after Shavuos, which doesn't sound so special, but the Meforshim explain, though, it is special. Why? Because we know Shavuos is one of the three regalim, and every regal besides Shavuos was 7 days. So therefore, you came for Pesach, you came for Sukkot, you had to stay in Jerusalem for a Shabbos, and you benefited from seeing one of the great miracles that the Lechem Aponim, the showbreads that stayed on the Shulchan for a week, if you stayed and you were there for Shabbos, you got to see them taking out the showbreads. And you saw the miracle that they were hot and steamy just as when they were put in. When you came for Shavuos, though, you would not have that opportunity because it's only 1 day. Go 1 day, you could leave. And you'd miss that, seeing that Shabbos. So, therefore, many would stay for the Shabbos Shelachar Shavuos, for the Shabbos after Shavuos, to see the miracle of the showbreads. And the symbolism for that would obviously be that although you've had an amazing Shavuos, and you were all excited, but how are you the Shabbos after Shavuos? Is your challah as fresh and tasty as it was on Shavuos night? Or in Shavuos, when you're all excited to learn, it's already 4 or 5 days after Shavuos, are you still that hot and excited about Shavuos? That is the message for the Shabbos Shelachar Shavuos. So, with that in mind, we're going to learn something that's not going to contradict this idea, but, you know, on the other hand, what happens if it's the Shabbos Achar Shavuos and you're really not that excited? So what do you do then? And that often happens. That often happens for men, especially, who they're up the whole Shavuos, they learned a long time, and then they get all burnt out. The week after Shavuos usually sees a significant drop in Torah learnings for some strange reason. So we want to analyze that side as well. What I'm going to do this time, it was very interesting. I was trying to find material for Shavuos. I saw a beautiful, beautiful piece by the Tolna Rebbe, who lives in Eretz Yisrael. It was about Shavuos. And I figured, where would I use it on Shavuos? But it was like really good, but really long. So it really wouldn't have any venue over Yontif to speak about it. But then as I was looking at it, I saw it would really, his idea, although he's not talking about Parshas Naso, can be applied to Parshas Naso. So what we're going to do for the first half an hour or so is we're going to go through briefly every item in the Parsha. And the overall question we're going to see, it seems quite disjointed type of Parsha. There's a number of various different topics, and you're trying to figure out what is the overall theme of the entire Parsha to which all the topics relate to in the theme. It's going to be that kind of a clash. So for the first half hour or so, we're going to go through all the issues. Some have questions. Some it's not questions. It's just how does that fit into the theme? Then we'll tell you the word of the Tolna Rebbe, and then we'll quickly try to tie up all the knots and show you how the whole Parsha fits in and why it definitely is the Parsha after Shavuos. Aside from the fact we know that the largest Parsha in the Torah is Parshas Naso, it's 176 Psukim. The largest amount of Medrash on the Torah is on Parshas Naso. The large amount of Zohar is on Parshas Naso. So clearly after Shavuos, there's this expectation we should be learning a lot. What happens to those who don't? So let's just jump right in, and some of the sources I put only because so you'll just know what the topics are. And there's, about 8 different topics over here. There could even be more. I just couldn't fit them all in over here. We start with the opening pasuk, the second pasuk. Naso es rosh b'nei Gershon. Take a census of the children of Gershon. Gam hi, them too. Leves avosam l'mishpachosam, following their father's houses according to their families. Now, this question's been bothering me for a long time. As you know, this seems to be broken away from what was before it. At the end of last week's Parsha, We know that the tribe of Levi had three sons, Gershon, Kehath, Merari, three families. And they all had jobs relating to carrying things in the Mishkan during the time of the desert. So in last week's Parsha, Kehath was already mentioned, was already counted, and he had the job of carrying the Luchos and all the utensils of the Mishkan. And then the Parsha abruptly stops. Now we start a new Parsha, but we just pick up where we left off with this now Count B'nai Gershon. Let's see what Gershon's job is. And then Merari, what's Merari's job? So the question that always bothered me was, put all three families in one of the two Parshas. You know, either put them all in Bamidbar or put it all in Nusa. If anything, it would have made, you know, it's a tough call because Bamidbar is a long Parsha and Nusa is a long Parsha. So it's not like, but still, I guess if we put, it would be more logical, it would be probably, since Nusa is such a big Parsha, just let's put this part dealing with Gershon and Merari, put them in Bamidbar and close it up. These are the jobs of the Levim. Why is it split in the Parsha? Begin the Parsha with B'nai Gershon. That, I think, is a bona fide question. Okay, after we're taught what the jobs of Gershon and Merari is, we move to the next topic. Second source, Tzavitz B'nai Yisrael, command the Jewish people, Yishalchu min ha-machana kol tzeruah v'chol zov v'chol tamei l'nefesh. And we are commanded to send out of the camp anyone who has tzeras, anyone who's a zov, who has some type of a discharge that makes them tamei, or anyone that came in contact with the dead. And how does that follow up from the jobs of Gershon and Merari? Where does that exactly fit into the flow of the Parsha? Yeah, you want to get the camp ready, but you know, a lot of other things are going to be talked about that does not have to do with the camp at all. So what's the follow-up with that? Next part of the Parsha is we're talking about theft. And it says that Baruch B'nai Yisrael, Isha Isha Kiyasu Mikol Chatas Adam, anyone does a sin, Limol Mal B'Hashem, to commit a sin against Hashem, V'Oshma, and it's guilty, HaNefesh, he, the soul, is guilty. And we find out what's it talking about. It's talking about theft. We'll see as the psukim go on. I'm not going to have time to go through every pasuk inside. And Rashi right away says, like, why are we having this here? We already had this before. We already know the laws of sin, of theft. That's the fourth source. Rashi already had it. But there's two new chidushim over here that we did not have before. And one is, it says in the next pasuk, v'hisvadu eschatosam, they will confess their sin. So that we did not hear that before. Before we had, if you steal from somebody, you pay him back. Okay. But how do you, but what's the idea of confessing the sin? So that's a new thing. Second thing, in the next pasuk says, and if this person who you stole from has no kinsman, what happens if you steal from someone, the person dies before you can pay him back? What do? Well, you pay back to the inheritors, to the inheritors. But what if this person does not have any inheritors? Now, who in the world could not have an inheritor? Every Jew is related somehow, Jewish geography. There's no such thing as one of it. Who could be the only one that doesn't have an inheritor? A convert that left no children. So what do you do then? You have to give to the Kohen. We didn't have that either. So therefore, we're adding on this Parsha. We had it before. We had it in Vayikra about someone who stole and swore falsely. So now we're told, we repeat it, for the two new issues, that he has to admit, and you have to, if a ger, you steal from a ger, you have to pay to the coin. Okay, so there's multiple questions we can ask over here. Question number one, so I don't get it. How about the first time just tell us that? You know, you have these classic Rashis that says, well, we had it before in Vayikra. Why is it? Oh, there's a couple new things. Say the couple new things over there. You don't have to repeat it at all. It's a pretty obvious question. Question one. Question two, if I'd ask you, where is the source in the Torah for vidui as part of the steps of tshuva? Most people don't come up with a quick answer. and this seems to be a most unlikely place, it's here. When you steal from somebody, you got to say vidu. So the question is, okay, there's 365 averis that you could do, and Torah has to pick one of those averis which you do vidu for. Why did it pick this one? Okay, that's a fair question. The whole laws of vidu come from this halacha. What about Chil Shabbos? How about vidu there? So why is vidu picked over here? Okay, second question. Third question is, how does this fit? Is this totally, how does this fit into this parsha again? We have the work of Gershon and Merari. We have the next, and we send out the impure people from the camp. Now we're saying, you know, if a person steals, and we talked about it a few weeks ago, well, you know, we do vidui. Where does that fit into the theme? We're going holus bolus. We have three different, totally different topics completely. How does that flow into what's going on over here? Let's go to the fifth source. What's the next story? That it's continuing right after this. It says, V'ish es kadashav lo yiyu. Everyone's holy things shall belong to him. Ish asher yitin l'koin lo yiyu. Whatever a man gives to the coin shall be his. What does that mean? Rashi says that you might have thought, this is talking about Truma and Meiser, you might have thought since the Torah already said that whatever you separate, 10% or 2% goes to Cohen and Levi, so I might have thought that once you already separated it, now it's just a question who you're going to give it to. I might have thought the Cohen and Levi could just walk right in and say, listen, you got to give us anyway, I'm going to take what's coming to me. No, there's something called Tova Sana. The owner still is entitled to decide who it goes to. So that's what the Torah is telling us, that if someone has to give Truman Meiser, it's his. It's his to decide who it goes to. So again, like, that's nice. Why don't we put down the laws of Truman Meiser? We have a whole extended parshios dealing with Truman Meiser. Again, punk, you're putting it in over here. So now I've got a fourth thing. They totally don't seem to relate to anything over here. Moving on, fifth source. Next is the story of the Eisha Sota, the woman who's suspected of immoral behavior, which totally doesn't fit in at all. But let's go further over here. What do we know? The special, well, I'm not going to go over the whole story with the Sota, you're well aware of it, but we know in source number 7, what does it say? It says, once the Kohen, v'kosa v'sa olo so ela, HaKoin Basever, the coin writes on a scroll the whole story over here of the laws of the Sota. And then what does he do? Mocha El Meimarim. And he etches it out into the water that he's going to give her to drink. So the question is, you know, what's the significance of this? So the Medrash Rab in source number 8 say, see, look how great it is to make shalom. That Hashem is willing to make peace between a man and a woman. He's willing to have his name be erased in order to make shalom. Okay, that's a nice idea. Let's continue. Source 9. Then she drinks the water. If she was guilty, then she dies. If she's not guilty, source 9, v'imlo nitma ha'isha utahorehi v'niksa v'nizra zara, she is clean and she is exempted and she will bear seed. And Chazal explained that if this woman wasn't able to have any children, she will now be able to have children. If she had difficult labors, she'll have an easy labor. Now, this is really astonishing. Now, I'm sure we all know people, wonderful tzidkanios, who don't have children. And we daven for them. And they don't have children. Now, this woman, let's think for a minute. Let's try to rehearse this. What kind of Eishes Chayil would you say this woman is? Husband tells a woman, listen, I saw you were hanging around Schwartz. You know, you cut it out and you don't hang around that guy anymore. He does that in front of witnesses. What does she do? A few days later, she checks into the Happiness Hotel with Schwartz and locks the door. And now, and there are witnesses who saw that, but we don't know what went on in the privacy of that room. Now I want to ask you, what kind of marriage have you got over here? What kind of Eishes Chayil do you have over here? One of two things are happening. One is bad and one is worse. right? I mean, let's be honest. How many husbands really would want to have such a wife? But, you know, I mean, really, the husband could divorce her straight out. But tricky part is he'd have to pay her ksuva right now until we determine if she's guilty or not. Okay. So she didn't die. Okay. So you think he's going to be singing Eish Yischiel that Shabbos with gusto? Eish Yischiel miYimtzah. I don't know. Schwartz found her. Right? I mean, how much, which we're saying here that Hashem's willing to raise his name to make Shalom. And now, come on, honestly, do you think there's going to be like real Shalom? Okay, so you didn't go all the way with him. But I told you, I mean, what were you doing? Playing Monopoly with him? Like, you had to be doing something there. And I told you not to go there. I mean, the husband said, I don't want you going. He says, I don't care what you say. Okay, so she didn't defile herself. What do you think? Think the marriage is going to be a good marriage afterwards? Oh, now you see, I didn't do it. Like I said, I didn't do it. Yeah, great. Did you listen to me? No. You did something that certainly, if I would have known you did that before, and I don't know if I would have married you, put on your shidduch resume, secluded with Schwartz, but didn't do anything. Would you want your son to marry such a girl? Okay, if he's ready, married to her, Mela, I don't know. And maybe he might want to divorce anyway. So the question is, what is Hashem benefiting by erasing his name? I mean, how much Shalom is going to be created? B, now this lady, because she did that, now she gets a kid? While the Beis Yaakov girl who's frum and pious and doesn't anything like that, she still doesn't have kids? It's a hard thing to understand. This issues. And again, what does this fit into the whole parsha over here? We move on. Next, source number 10, the Nazir. Well, at least here we have the famous Chazal that tells us the connection of Nazir to Sota. A person who sees a Sota in her disgrace should become a Nazir. Okay, fine. But then again, but Sota doesn't belong here, so why will Nazir belong here? Just as a follow-up. And then we have an interesting couple ideas with this. Source number 10. At the end of the person's Nazir period, he brings a number of korbanos, and he brings a shlamim, brings an ola, but he also brings a korban chatas, a sin offering. Now, a sin offering is done if you do a sin. This fellow did a very laudable thing. He said, I'd like to be a Nazir. I'm not going to drink wine. I'm not going to go to the cemetery, this and that. So the Ramban in source 11, I put more of the Hebrew than the English over here. He says that the Chazal don't seem to the reason for the Chatas doesn't seem to be explained. So he says al derech hapshat. He says kaiisha zeh chotei nasho b'malos. This person sins by finishing his nazirs. Ki hu ata nazir b'kedusha sova. Right now, as a nazir, he is very sacred. He is really a holy roller. For he should stay a Nazir forever. He should always remain a holy Nazir forever. And he brings a couple of psukim in Amos and other places that he's almost like a Navi. We compare a Nazir almost to a Navi. And right at the end, he says, v'hineu tzarech kapara, he needs an atonement. B'shuval lehitame betavas olam. He is now going to return himself to sully himself, as it were, in worldly passions. So Rabbeinu Bachaya asks, I still don't understand the answer, because usually a sin is only once you do a sin. What's the sin? He's making Kiddush on wine now. He's going to a funeral? What kind of sin is that? It's a very difficult Ramban. Be that as it may, he's called a sinner. Be that as it may, he's called a sinner. So that's a little difficult, but let's go a little further. Look at source 12. There's one last thing that happens. The Kohen, there's a number of items that have to be waved around. And the Pasuk is in the context. And this is how you finish the Nazirus. You finish the Nazirus. You bring the Korbanos and this and that, and you wave the offering around. And then the last three words. Now he's done. He's not a Nazir anymore. Va'achar, and afterwards, yishteh ha-nazir yain. The nazir may drink wine. Now, what's wrong with that? The word nazir. He's not a nazir anymore. It should have said va'achar, and afterwards, yishtayayim. He's not a nazir anymore. Ramban said he's not a nazir anymore. He's bringing korban chatos because he's not a nazir anymore. So now you're calling him a nazir. Okay, moving on. All right, what's the next story? The next point of the parsha 13 is birchas kohanim. The barrel arm of one of lemor kos of varchas may shalom arlahem. Go do the birchas kohanim. Nice. What's that doing over here? How does that follow up from being a nazir? There's nothing in common over here. And finally, the last source, a million psukim dealing with the korbanos of the Nesiim. We know that after the Mishkan was built, on the first of Nisan of the second year, it says, "Vayakrivu Nisei Yisrael Rosh Beis Avosam." The Nesiim brought their own individual korbanos to start off the inauguration, so to speak, of the Mishkan. And this is clearly out of order, because the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar is already the count that began Sefer Bamidbar was in Rosh Chodesh Iyar after the first year. Now we're going back to what happened in Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and that's the parsha. So I don't know how many it was, 8, 9 different topics. Totally, go try to find a common thread between them. Doesn't seem to work out. So what's the Torah trying to do with all this? And, you know, why? And again, the famous question, and each korban that takes about 5 psukim, it repeats each one completely. It doesn't say, well, this was the first nasi and everybody was the same. This is what makes it such a long parsha. Because you got about an extra 60 psukim, just keep repeating over and over and over the same thing. And that's the parsha. Okay, so those are the issues. So how do we explain them? So now we're going to do the piece of the Tolna Rebbe, and we're going to add on a few more questions now. Okay, let's go to source 15. Interesting Gemara. Gemara says, "Mipnei ma bedibros harishonos lo namer behem tov." How come in the first tablets you don't have the word tov written in it? "Ubedibros achronos nemar behem tov." And in the second year, but you do have the word tov, by Kabedis Avichav Esimecha, it says, "Laman yitav loch," so it should be good for you. Only in the second Dibros, not in the first Dibros. More answers, I'll tell you why. Hol v'sofal lihishtaber, because they got broken. The first ones got broken, so why would you want to write tov on the good ones? More says, v'chisofal lihishtaber mahavi, so what does it matter? They got broken. So Ravashi answers, chas v'sholam paska tova. God forbid that Tov should ever stop from the Jews. Okay, there's a lot to talk about over here, but the Tolna Rebbe focuses on this one point. What's the point? Let's say you're making a shidduch. You're marrying off your son or daughter. And let's say it even further. Let's say, you know, your child is not exactly giving you a lot of nachas with this shidduch. For whatever reason, you know, let's say that your daughter is marrying a guy who's a bit of a gigolo, all right? You know, a gigolo, every gigolo has his black book, if you're familiar with this, where he's got a list of women that he can call to give him a good time. So that's the famous black book. So your daughter, you know, your Beis Yaakov daughter, she somehow, you know, she's been going out with this guy, and she has great news. We're getting married, you know, to John the Gigolo. Okay? And, of course, you're going to have to pay for the wedding. Now, you try to talk your daughter out of this, but she's not listening. She's in love. Okay? Now you've already made 5, 6 weddings, and let's say you're of a good means, and you can make a very nice wedding. And the previous weddings, you had a 17-piece band. You had flowers flown in from the Netherlands on the Concorde that morning. And, you know, the 17-course meal, everything. you know, everything. And now you're planning this wedding. So you say to your husband, listen, they're probably going to get divorced in 6 months anyway. You know, let's try to do it as cheaply as possible. Like, why waste our time, no? Wouldn't that be your way of looking at it? Okay, so let's look at this Gemara and really understand what this Gemara is saying over here. Gemara is saying that Hashem did not put the word Tov in the first Logos. Why? Because he knew they were going to be broken. Which means he knew they were going to worship the golden calf. And as we said last week, he knew it's going to be a broken shidduch. You with me? And he's the one, he's the father of the groom or the bride, wherever you want to look at it. So did Hashem make it a fancy wedding at Sinai? You bet you did. Look at all the detail that was in Parshas Yisro and repeated in Parshas Mishpatim. You have Moshe going up the mountain, going down the mountain, Hashem saying, oh, you're so precious, let's make a covenant, and we're going to be forever, you're going to be my cherished people. And then they say Nasa, and then Nasa v'nishma, and then what happens, he brings the Malachim with the crowns, it's amazing, I'm in love with you. And then he makes all these particular mitzvahs, 3 days of preparation before we get the Torah, and then we have to stay away from the mountain, and then there's the thunder, and the lightning, and the sound effects, and the smoke, and the tumult, and the Shekhinah coming down, and the grass growing. It was like mamish. It was amazing. Hashem put everything out there. All the malachim are coming. It was a guest inviting thousands of guests to the wedding. Why? It's going to be a broken shidduch. Hashem knew that in advance. So why did he do that? But now the next chazal is even more shocking. Source 16, David HaMelech says, Vayefatuhu befiim, they beguiled him with their mouth. Uvilshonam yechazvelo, and with their tongue they lied to him. Velibam lo nachonimo, their heart was not sincere with him. Velo nemnu beviso, they were not faithful in his covenant. Who is that talking about? Look at the Medrash, source 17. So at the Jewish people at Har Sinai when they said Nasa v'nishma. When they said Nasa v'nishma, that was when they beguiled him with their mouth and with their tongue they lied to him. Their heart was not sincere because vayifatu b'fihem V'libam hoya mechuvan lavodas kachavim. Their hearts were directed to idol worship. Do you hear what the Medrash is saying? The Medrash is saying when the Jews said Nasa v'nishma, they still had the black book in their pocket. They still are very excited about Avodah Zarah. So now, which makes it more difficult, source 18, which I showed you last week, how could it be in source 18? Then when they said Nasa v'nishma, Hashem crowned them, the Malachim come down and crowned them with two crowns. Like, what for? Hashem knows. You can't fool Hashem. Hashem knew what was on their minds. David HaMelech is saying, they said one thing when they meant another. This is really shocking. This is a medrash that you don't hear too often at Shavuos time. I wasn't aware of that medrash. It sounded like everything was great. Then people all wonder, how could they sin with the golden calf afterwards? There's all kinds of Torah, but now it becomes a little bit more understandable. They never got rid of the black book to idolatry. So that's the question that Tolna Rebbe asks. So he asks, brings one more chazal and asks the question there. And from there, we're going to move on. He brings an interesting Tosefta in Shabbos in Source 19, a story with Rav Tarfon. Rav Tarfon was sitting in a shady place on Shabbos. His students brought him a cold pitcher of water. Rav Tarfon said to the students, "Nu, what's the bracha that you make when drinking water to quench your thirst?" Oh, they said, "Rebbe, you teach us." "We don't know." He said, He said, you make the bracha borei nefashos rabos v'chesronam. Now, this is, we know the Gemara in brachas, the machlokas, we hold, you say, shahakol, and borei nefashos is the after bracha. Reb Tarfon holds borei nefashos is the first bracha. I don't want to get involved in the details of the machlokas. Be that as may, he says, you make a bracha, then, okay, the bracha is borei nefashos. Fine. Then he said to them, would you like me to tell you a little Dvar Torah? He said, yeah, tell us a Dvar Torah. So he references source 20. When Yosef is sold by his brothers, it says the brothers sat down to have their meal. They lifted up their eyes, and behold, there was a caravan of Ishmaelites coming down from Gilead, and their camels were carrying spices, balm, and lotus as they go down to Egypt. Now, there is a famous Rashi Chazal, but we'll just use in the context of the Tosefta. So we'll go back to 19. The verse says, they sat down to eat bread and lifted their eyes and saw blah, blah, blah. And he says, it is the way for Arabs to carry hides and tar whose smell is foul. Normally, Arabs carry very foul-smelling merchandise. But here it's nice-smelling stuff. What's going on? But they put this tzaddik between precious things. How's that? Why is that? What's going on over there? So Rav Tarfon says, is this not a kal v'chomer, an a fortiori argument? Now, obviously, when Yosef is being sold out to Egypt, it was a time where Hashem was displaying divine anger towards him. So if at the time of anger towards a tzaddik, not a radzik, a tzaddik, that they have mercy upon them, all the more so at times of mercy? He says, you see, when a person is being punished, that Hashem still does something good for them. Can you imagine when Hashem's going to do good for you, how good it's going to be? So there's a number of questions we have to ask over here. The first question is, they were taking a drink of water. He said, what's the bracha? And he said, we don't know. I'll tell you the bracha. Now I'm going to tell you the Dvar Torah. What does the Dvar Torah have to do with the idea of the bracha? Like, why throwing in this Dvar Torah? Number two, this Dvar Torah is a very difficult Dvar Torah to understand. Imagine the following. It should never happen to any of us. Imagine you're on a plane, big 757, big plane, whatever. And you're flying over, and you get a message. This is your captain speaking. We're very sorry to tell you, all four engines have failed. We are going to crash into the Pacific Ocean in the next 5 minutes from an altitude of 20,000 feet. The stewardess are coming by with duty-free things, and because of this, we're going to give you everything for free. Get perfume, you know, all the perfumes, you know, Chanel number 5, whatever is Gucci, whatever, whoever you can match, whatever you ever couldn't afford, we're going to let you have it now. Okay, what do you have to say about that? He said, what are you trying to tease me? Trying to tease me? Like, I couldn't afford it my whole life, or I can get, like, all the cigarettes I want. You know, we're going down. You know, there's an Indian in Halach of Loeg LaRush. You can't make fun of the poor. When you go to a cemetery, a man has to tuck his tzitzis in. Because when you walk by a cemetery with your tzitzis, it's like you're making fun of them. Ha ha, I can put on tzitzis, you can't. So it's like you say, here, you can have all the perfume you want. Yeah, because we're going to die anyway. So, like, are you teasing me? So with Yosef, I mean, what's going on? Yosef is suffering. So I'm saying, see, I at least gave a nice perfume, nice smelly trip down. He says, what does it matter? My life's over. My life's over. I'm going down to Egypt. Nobody comes back from Egypt. You can imagine if, God forbid, they're putting Yidden in the cattle cars to go to Auschwitz. And they're all packed in like crazy. Here, you could have a rose. You mocking me? So this is the questions he asks. And we're going to start off by telling you the answer and then spending a lot of time explaining the answer, okay? And how it applies in many places. It's interesting, there happens to be a halachic source for this. We're just going to mention it in source 21. You don't have to lose a lot of sleep over it. There's an Indian of Hektish if you want to give something to the Beis HaMikdash. It belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. Let's say you are giving some animals to the Beis HaMikdash. And right now, if you sell them right here and right now, you get X amount of dollars. But if you wait for market day and you go for a later date and you go to a different place, you can get twice as much. So the question is, how much, and then let's say the animal dies. So then how much did you have to pay for it? You pay for what it's worth now, or would it have been worth a little later? The answer is you pay for what it was worth now. Why? And here's the rule. Ein lehektish ela mekomo v'shaito. The sanctuary can claim the veil of anything only in its place and at its own time. Now, that's a halachic idea, but all halacha and hashkafa always merge together. And the Tolna Rebbe, in his Sefer, Botzina de Oraisa, he says the following yesod. I just put the main yesod here, and we will develop this idea. He says, the way of the world, which is the wrong way, is to look at everything within the overall general context and to associate the small details to the overall situation. Okay, what does that mean? Well, let's say, for example, you break your leg. You break your leg. You're walking a shul, you break your leg. Okay, now, how are you viewing life at this point in time? And it hurts. It really hurts. You broke your... So you view your life that right now, my life is terrible. And here's where the mistake is. And everything about my life is terrible right now. Because everything can be viewed through the lens of the broken leg. Now, it could very well be, just at that very moment, you know, let's say you were in the house, it's Yontif, the grandchildren are there, it's like amazing, you know, and you're going down the stairs, and you fall down the stairs, you break your leg. Yeah. And you're screaming in pain. And then, guess what? For the first time, your grandchild starts to walk. Didn't take any steps before. Now, how would you normally react when your grandchild takes their first steps? Why, so cute, such nachas, Baruch Hashem. You know, and then your dar says, look, Ima, Yankee is walking. Who cares? My foot's killing me. In other words, we let the overall situation dictate how we look at everything in that situation. Now, you could say the simple thing, you know, you're not seeing the trees from the forest, but I think it goes much deeper than that. It goes much deeper than that because it has so much application. But that's the problem. People tend to look at the overall way things look and then all the little details that don't necessarily have anything to do with the overall situation. We kind of ignore it. And by doing that, we are robbing ourselves of appreciating so many beautiful things in life. Let's say, chas v'shalom, somebody is given a bad report on their health. Okay, and when that happens, that seems to just take up all the space. And I could understand why. It takes up all the space. But then you got to say, wait a minute, you know. But still, Baruch Hashem, we have enough money that we can pay for all this. We can get a good doctor. We can pay for the medicines. There's a lot of other things that are going well right now. Let's say, chas v'shalom, the doctors are saying a very bad report. They're saying, you know what? At the best, we're giving you 3 months. At the best. So again, what's the tendency of mankind to say? My life is done. It's done. 3 months, and I'm going to wither away. My life is done. Yeah, but you know, there's a wedding coming up next week. Who can go to a wedding? I'm dying. You know, why should I bother to do anything? Because it's all over. No, if you have 3 more months, those 3 more months are very precious. Why should those 3 months be shortchanged just because you're going to die at the end? But that's human nature. We let the overall situation, whether it's good or whether it's bad, we let it take over everything. And anything that's only either, and this is the vort where he's saying, Ein lehektish ela mekomo v'shaito. Hektish only has its time and its place. which means to say, when you're looking at Hegdish means any holy, good, wholesome activity has its time and has its place. So although the overall situation is bad, why should that suck the life out of a particular time where right now everything is good, or in this place everything is good, although later you're going to be in a different place, later you're going to be in a different time, but why should this present place and this present time not be as beautiful as it should be? What if you weren't dying? Wouldn't you be happy if this was happening now? What if you didn't break your leg? Wouldn't you be happy to see this now? So why the fact that you broke your leg should take away from your enjoyment or appreciation of this situation? And this has so many applications over here. So let's go to back to Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Tarfon says, well, if you're thirsty, you know, what bracha do you make on this? We don't know what bracha you make. I said, well, what's the give and take over here? So let's think for a minute. Okay, when was the last time anybody here drank a glass of water when they were thirsty? You did? Today? Yeah. Yesterday. Okay, you don't have to answer the next question. I won't even ask you the next question. We'll just say, think of the last time you drank a glass of water. Did you have like a tremendous amount of kavana on that glass of water? And many people, I'm not saying you, many people don't. And I'll even tell you why. Because what's a glass of water? Now, if you told me that you're having an espresso or a latte, there's so many different ways of coffee now. I just use just regular instant coffee. You know, you can get a coffee for $10, you know, with the froth and the this and the that, you know. Now that deserves a bracha. A cocktail, Bloody Mary. If you're a man, a beer, scotch. Now that's a chashev drink, a protein drink that tastes amazing. Now that's a chashev thing. That deserves a bracha. Glass of water? And it's not even in a Voss bottle. What is it already? What is it already? Right? So, you know, I'm thirsty, so I have some water. I wouldn't give water to a guest. So wait a minute. Why are you shortchanging water? What do you mean, why am I shortchanging water? Look what I have instead. Look what I have. Look what's in my fridge. Okay, you know, honestly, the only reason people drink water today is because they're telling you it's healthy. Hold on. They're just telling you it's healthy. Believe me, if it wasn't for all this, for your health, nobody would drink. When I was a kid, who drank water? Losers drank water. You know, you go to the fridge, you ask your mother, can I have some drinks? She says, take water. I don't want water, I want soda. Remember, when you were young, soda was healthy. No, who knew anything about things that are not healthy? What did you have when you were a kid? Not on Shabbos, really? It's soda. Even older people, they never drink water. The Holocaust survivors, none of them would drink water. A bazillion to drink water. What did they drink? Tea. Right? They make a hot tea. I remember my uncle, Zichrono Levracha, whenever I come to his house, you always see like six glasses of tea because he made it all hot. Then we have to cool down, you know? And they drank tea. If you had a guest, would you dare give him water? The chutzpah. Think about it. When you were young, did you ever drink water? Only time in school, after recess, at the water fountain, because there was nothing else. And you came in because you were mama's thirsty. You were and you'd get like three drinks, push you out, next guy, right? But think about it. Who drinks water? Now, you'll live long if you drink water, and now we're jogging and this, and you take a bar. But really, even Gatorade still pushes out the water. But anyway, but who drank water? So who drinks water, loser? What do you have? You have a fridge. You got a fridge. You got coffee. You got beer. You got soda. You got all this. Forget about health. Which one are you going for? You ain't going for the water. So now why is it that people think water's not so special? Because they look at the overall context of the wealth of life. And water compared to everything else is nothing. Okay, wait a minute. How about if you're in the desert and you haven't had anything to drink for 2 days, and the guy says, I'm dying, and you happen to go, this guy comes by, here's some water. What? Just water? Don't you have a coffee at least? Hotch, a beer? No, forget it, I don't want it. No, you're not going to say that. You know how valuable that water is? Saves your life. Water, by definition, is a life-saving drink. Why should we look askance at it just because we have better alternatives? So that's what Rav Gamliel was trying to teach his students. He said, what brach you make on water if you're thirsty? Remember, it's if you're thirsty. If you're not thirsty, you don't make a brach. If you're thirsty, you make a shakel. So he probably saw they're going, You know, wine, you know, beer, water. He probably deduced from their body reaction, they're not getting it. They'll be masking, but they don't get it. Okay, let me ask you, you already heard the Dvar Torah? Yeah, let's talk about Yosef. So he tells them all the thing about Yosef. And certainly the students are wondering, so you're giving him free duty free before the plane crashes? Yosef had a lot of things on his mind as he was going down to Egypt. He knows. He's a frum boy who now is going to a very not frum place. He knows nobody ever came back from Egypt, period. He is not coming back from Egypt. And so to speak, he is letting the situation enslave his ability to see things properly. And therefore, the Tolna Rebbe explains what Rabbi Tarfon was trying to explain to them is that the fact of the matter is you have to realize that even though you're going down to Egypt and even though things are looking really bad, but you know what? If you were going down with tar and oil, it would even be worse. And don't ignore the good things that happen, even though the overall is not good. In other words, even though everything is bad, you still should say, Yosef probably said, Baruch Hashem, at least the trip is a nice trip. He would not allow himself to let the overall situation dilute the details that are beautiful. Now, that's not just nice poetry, because that really is what saved Yosef's life. Because as he goes down to Egypt, this is the theme, and Hashem was hinting to him, this is what's going to keep you alive. If you will keep your eye on the ball, on the details, don't be enslaved from the overall situation. Don't let the overall situation dictate how you have to view every detail in life. And although you're going down to Egypt, and although that's very bad, you still are a Ben Torah, a Shomer Torah Mitzvahs. And although you won't find one Ben Torah, Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, and you're not going to find a Shidduch, and you're not going to get married, and you're not going to have any Jewish Einiklich, but you still have what? Your time. The Kedusha only has its time and its place. Right now, you can still say Moda Ani. Right now, you can still say the Shema. Right now, you can chazer over your Mishnayos that your Abba taught you. Can you not do that right now? But I'm not, but what's the future? I'm not interested. Kedusha is not interested in the future. Kedusha is interested in the present time and situation that you're in. You're not forced to give up the maximum benefit of the moment. And you know what? You're not down in Egypt yet. Sordichnish. Diet Sora Lashaita. Let worry about the problem when it comes. Yes, you're going to go to Egypt, but right now, it smells good. Make a bracha, Borei Minei B'Samim. Even going down, I'm sure if they all kept Kol HaTorah Kulo, it must be Yosef made the bracha Borim Eves. Some had to. Even in the caravan, you could still be close to Hashem. And that message is what saved them. Because when he went through everything in Egypt and all the trials and tribulation, when Ashes Potiphar is throwing everything at him, and he's going to say, what am I going to gain by turning her away? There's going to be the next chicks that's going to come. You think he's a handsome guy? You think he's going to be able to get away from these women? And the next one's going to come, the next one's going to come. And who says I'm not going to give in the next time? I mean, how's it going to be? I'm 17 years old, 8 years old. I'm going to live my whole life without ever being with a woman. You know, it's got to, sooner or later, I'm going to get worn down. So I might as well give in now. He says, you know what? Right now, I have the ability to say no. I'm going to say no. You're right. Maybe later I won't be able to say no. Just because I won't be able to say no now, later, doesn't mean I shouldn't say no now. And because of that, then Hashem, and it took a long time. He was down there 13 years before he saw the light at the end of the tunnel. 13 years. He kept always looking for that little precious moment. I could be a good servant for my master. I'll be a good servant for my master. Two people have a scary dream. I try to help them out. What does it matter? You're in a jail. You're going to be stuck in jail your whole life. But if I could do a nice deed, why not do a chesed, even though I'm not getting out? Even though I don't ever see myself getting married? Just keep hanging in there. You know, you're not the one who decides those things. Now, it could be very well, Joseph, you know, if Hashem wanted, could have died in oblivion. He still would have had all those amazing schuyot of the good things he would have done. But at the end of the day, because he kept on focusing on the details, when the time came, the opportunity came, he was able to get through that. That's what Rabbi Tarfon is saying. So next time you get to a glass of water, don't have it lose out what it's worth. Next time you take a glass of water, just for a moment, imagine you're in the desert drinking this glass of water. Just imagine that. Just when you take that glass of water, say, I'm in the desert. If I was in the desert, how precious would this water should be? And then, Mama, should make a shahakoni. Believe me, if you were in the desert and you were starving, it was 2 days, and you got this, before you take it, you'd make the best shahakol you ever made in your life. So did that water lose that quality just because you got other things in life? So that is the yesod. With this yesod, we can do wonderful things with this. This is like amazing. And let's be honest, you know, many of us suffer from this. Hashem blesses us with so many things, but you have this one thing that takes over the whole situation. But you have, you know, you have 10 kids, they're all fine, and this one went off the derech. And that one went off the derech, so then everything is off the derech. Right? That's the Yetzer's job, is to do that for us. We got to be smarter than that. For example, Gemara in Brachos gives us the story, source number 23, with Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the one from Vagoda, Harei Anikav and Yeshivim Shana. There was a big machlokas in the yeshiva over there. Who would be the Rosh Yeshiva? It's a big machlokas. The one who was the Rosh Yeshiva, they took him out. And they're looking for another Rosh Yeshiva. They go to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And he asks his wife, smart fellow, should I take this job of being the Rosh Yeshiva? What does the right wife say? You know what? You know what? They're going to want you today. They're going to get rid of you tomorrow. You know, what if the other rabbi gets reinstated and you go out and this and that? So, like, why bother? It's not going to be a long-term thing. So what did he say? She said, perhaps they will dispose you later. He replied to her, there's a proverb, let a man use a cup of honor for one day, even if it be broken the next. If I can give a shear and be the Rosh Yeshiva for one day, it's a great opportunity. Let me do it, even if it's just for one day. But what kind of career path is that? You're going to get closed out of this anyway. It doesn't matter. For one day, I could do it. Right? I was 18 years old. They don't respect me. How long are they going to respect an 18-year-old punk? What happened? Then that night, Hashem made him turn gray. Now he's Kaven Shivim Shana. You know, don't worry about what the big picture is. Look at what's right in front of you, even though there don't seem to be any long-term benefits from it. Don't let the long-term way of life affect the way you're going to see it over here. Shlomo Karlbach tells a story. You can find this in the Karlbach Haggadah, the first Dvar Torah in the Haggadah, where he tells of a story of once he was in Waco, Texas. And he was going to a mikveh in Waco, Texas. That's already a chiddush. I couldn't imagine there would be a mikveh in Waco, Texas, but there was. You only know Waco, Texas, for that whole cult over there that got killed over there. But there's a frum community, I guess a small one, in Waco, Texas. So he's going to the Mikveh of Shabbos. He sees this elderly fellow, totally secular guy. There's different versions of the story, so I'm not going to admit I have the, you know. Some say tattooed, not tattooed face. But an old guy clearly looks secular. And, you know, Rav Shlomo is looking at the fellow, and he's saying, oh, a good Erev Shabbos, my holy brother, you know, the whole routine. And the guy's kind of looking at it, and Shlomo, like, he's just so curious. So, yeah, I don't know exact words he used. He said, you wouldn't mind me asking, it's very funny, it's unusual to find, to meet you in a mikvah. Something like that, you know, diplomatically. Like, what is a secular guy doing in a mikvah? I mean, you're talking about a real secular guy, like in his 80s, going to a mikvah, Erev Shabbos. Like, this is just... So he says, let me tell you my story. He says, I'm a Holocaust survivor, and when I was young, I was a Vizhnitzer Chosid. Vizhnitzer Chosid. My father was a Chosid. I was a little boy. And one time the Vizhnitzer Rebbe came, he was fearing a Tish, and I was like 5 or 6 years old, I wanted to go to the Tish. So my father takes me along, but you go to any Tish, you don't even come within 50 feet of the Tish. But it was a little kid, so what did I do? I went subterranean, I went between all the legs of everybody, and I made my way right under like the Rebbe is here, and I was like right under the table. And the Rebbe saw me, and he got like nachas from it, you know? And during the whole tish, the Rebbe slips me down a little piece of kugel and this and that. He's joking around with me, you know? It was like Mama Shomai. It was Mama Shomai. Then the Rebbe is saying his Dvar Torah, and the Rebbe says, you know, there'll be a day that the Yetzer Hara is going to tell us that we're not worthy to serve Hashem. And you might think, maybe you shouldn't. But whenever the Yetzer Hara comes to you and tells you that, you tell the Yetzer Hara in my name that I don't have to listen to you. That's told the Hasidim. I don't have to listen to you. And he says, did you hear that, little boy? You don't have to listen. That's it. And Holocaust, off the derech, this and that, a whole life. He's in his boardroom Friday afternoon in Waco, Texas. All of a sudden, this idea pops in his mind. You know, I haven't been in a mikveh in like 65, 70 years. Maybe I should go to the mikveh. Comes the Yetzer, says, what are you doing to come to the mikveh for? You're a fried guy. You don't put on tefillin. You don't keep kosher. You don't do anything. 65 years, this, all this. You don't do anything. Now, who are you to come and go to the mikveh? The Vizhnitzer Rebbe said, I don't have to listen to you. So that's why I'm in the mikvah. That's the story of that Kedusha only has its time and its place. You're right. Who knows? Maybe he's going to burn in hell for the last 65 years. But who knows? Yes, he's not a good Jew. Whatever you want to say about whatever the Yetzer wants to say about him. One thing's sure. Going to the mikvah is a good thing. It's going to change it. I don't know. Is that it? You want to do a good thing? Just do it. You have that moment, that's all you have. Or like the Gemara in Chagiga, source 24, Rav Edi, the father of Rav Yaakov, it would take him 3 months from from Waco, Texas, to make it to the yeshiva in Surah. It took him 3 months to go to be at the yeshiva. He'd stay for a day, and then he'd go back for 3 months. So people kind of joked, and you can imagine if this would happen in Lakewood or a yeshivish place like this. You can imagine, you know. With good jest, they called him the one-day scholar, which, you know, wasn't the nicest thing, whatever, one-day scholar. And he, you know, was dispirited. And he said, you know, and he said, I'm the laughing stock of the world. Rabbi Yochanan heard this. Then he talks about a pasuk, those people who seek out Hashem day by day and delight in my ways. He says, do we only seek Hashem by day and not at night? Why does it say day by day? He says, whoever studies Torah even one day in the year, Torah considers that he'd studied the whole year. So you see that even if you only can learn one day, so what's the matter? What's it worth? You know what? It's worth. You got to realize what Kedusha is. Kedusha is the most amazing thing in the world. Torah, mitzvah is the most amazing thing in the world. So if you have something good, go for it no matter what. This is the yesod. Okay, with this in mind, now let's get this really good now. So now let's look at the Jewish people. The Jewish people at Har Sinai. Hashem knows. He's not even going to put the word tov in the luchos. Because he knows that it's not going to work. More than that, he knows they're carrying a black book inside. And yet, for some reason, Hashem says, do you want my Torah? And he knows when they're saying Nasa v'nishma that they don't mean it. So we asked, what's it worth? The answer is, as we said, ain b'kedusha, kedusha only has its time and place. At this moment, now you got to remember what's going on over here. The Jewish people, remember where they're coming from? They're in Egypt. They were assimilated. They were idol worshippers. Okay, Hashem gave them a break. He took them out. Now, if you remember from last week's parash, remember we also said he showed them all the suffering they're going to get. All the Holocaust they're going to get for being Jews. You remember that part, right? So now, Hashem goes to the rest of the world. And they all say, well, what does it say in the Torah? Well, I can't steal. I don't want the Torah. I don't want the Torah. The Jewish people says, listen, whatever you want us to do, we're going to do it. Hashem says, yeah, but I know they don't mean it. But then Hashem says, but wait a minute. Let's not lose sight of the detail, although we're looking at the whole overall picture. The whole overall picture is they're going to sin. There's no question about it. Hashem knows them. You think of people that were slaves for so long, even no matter how great the 7-week rehab till Shavuos was, you don't think they're going to crumble to bits when they really have a test? Hashem isn't stupid. He knew exactly what was going to happen. But he says, you know what, considering where they are, I can't even get, you know what? At least if you would even sometimes lie to me that you want to be good, that's worth something. You know, I don't even have, the non-Jews even lie to me that they want the Torah. That they so much don't want it, they're not even considering it. And the Jews, they feel at least, you know, it probably is something good, but it's probably way too hard for us. But you know what? They're even at least willing to lie that they want it. Considering the whole world situation, that's good. And they're really, they said, yeah, we'll be in it for the long term and this and that. But really they're not. And they're fooling themselves because they still have their black book. But right now, how do they feel right now? Right now, they love me enough to lie to me that they want it. The other goyim said, we're not going to lie to you. Hashem says, that's amazing. In the little detail, in this little concept, let's not go all the way, it's not going to work out. But, you know, let's look at that nobody in the world even wants to touch Hashem with a 10-foot pole. And the Jews are at least willing to touch him with a 10-foot pole. He says, that's special. And yes, what happened? They fell terribly. But let's think for a minute. What if the Jews would have said, we're not interested? Like all the other guys were not interested. How would have world history played itself out? The fact that for that one moment, even though, you know, as I say, you get carried away with the moment, as it were. Get carried away with the moment, you know. You know, like the guy with the black book with your Beis Yaakov daughter, you know, at the moment he loves her. Even though it's a gigolo, but at the moment, you're going to say, do you not love her? Yeah, I love her. Yeah, she's good, you know. But aren't you, after a couple of weeks, going to get bored with the same woman? You go to the next woman? It could be, but I'm not thinking about that right now. But you're thinking about that right now. But right now, will you make your daughter happy for 2 weeks? Probably. Problem is 5 years from now. 6 months from now. But the 2 weeks are still good. Now, I'm not suggesting this for a shidduch, but I'm just saying in terms of spirituality, if Klal Yisrael, even for a day, saying they love Hashem, don't minimize it. Because in spite of how terrible our black book was, at the end of the day, 3,500 years later, we're still here. The gigolo Jews are still here. I say that affectionately. right? We still have people willing to die for Hashem. Yeah, we do a million averus, for sure. But what else does Hashem have? Americans? Canadians? What does he have? He's got nobody. He's got us. Yeah, we got big Yetzers. Yeah, we make a lot of mistakes. But every special moment, only the Jewish people made special moments. They're the only nation who will rise up and do a Kiddush Hashem here and there, even though they eat treif their whole life. And as far as Hashem is concerned, that's all that matters. So stop overanalyzing and predicting and what's practical and what's pragmatic as not as totally not amazing Nasa V'Nishma was not amazing, that there was a detail of it that was amazing. Do you understand what we're saying here? So that's a more honest way of looking at it. Let's not look at it, oh, they were amazing. They were perfect. The perfect shidduch. The perfect thing. They rose to such a... They did, but so temporary. It was so phony on a certain level. On a certain level. Pragmatically, it didn't make any sense. But they do have holy souls deep inside of them that, you know, one day they'll come in touch with it. One day it'll come. And to Hashem, he said, and that's still an amazing secret. The amazing secret is to... What did they do? They were able to at least focus in on that moment. They could have said, you know, we know what we are. We know we're idol worship. You know, we know that we're going to, we'd like it, but we know we're going to come back to this. God's like, why bother with it? Why bother? You know, right now we're feeling good about you. We know we're gigolos. We're going to go back to idols. And they did. And Shevet Dan had Pesel Micha with them. Hey, Shevet Dan crossed the Yamsuf with Pesel Micha. And they never gave up Pesel Micha. The whole 400 years they're in the Eretz Yisrael. Hashem knew his shidduch. But still you say Nasa V'Nishma. Even for a minute, it's worth it. Those minutes are worth it. As the Vizier Rebbe said, don't let the Yetzer say you're not entitled to do these things. Don't let him talk you into this.
It's also not healthy to like think to yourself, okay, I could do something bad. Because right now, at this moment, I'm doing something good.
No, not to say you can do something good. No, no, bad.
Someone can think that way. That
no, no, that's not what we're saying. We're not saying I'm doing the good because I know I'm going to do bad. You say, you know who you are. You know you're not able to stay on this level. You know you can't. You know it. Don't lie to yourself. But the problem is when you think that way, you say, well, why should I bother doing anything good? Don't cheshbon so much. Even if you think you're accurate, that you're not such a spiritual person, fine. Take advantage, carpe diem, take advantage of this moment. That's all. Could be you're wrong, and but the Yetzer Hara's job is to make you 10 times worse than you are. And even if he's right, he's, you know. But that's all your job. Your job is right now, what's the detail moment? The detail moment, there is good in this detail moment. So let's find the good that's in this detail moment. Let's not make so many cheshbonos. That's the problem. We're always making cheshbonos. So why is this such an important message for Shavuos? And especially for after Shavuos. So you have a lot of people, again, this part is a little bit more for the men, but you'll forgive me. You know, not all guys learn so much. Maybe you have husbands who do learn, maybe husbands who don't. But somehow Shavuos, everybody kind of rises to the occasion. I'm going to step Shavuos night. Okay, some guys really learn well, some guys don't learn really well. But remember he said last week it was the oath of loyalty, wasn't it? Didn't he say it was the oath of loyalty? Now let's be honest. Many people who made the oath of loyalty Shavuos night, aren't they being phonies? Don't you know that after Shavuos you're going to go back to everything else? It just so happened to work out well. You had a Shabbos before, you could sleep for 5 hours. So you can't sleep anyway, Matzah Shabbos, so you might as well be one of the holy rollers and stay up all night and learn. And then you sleep the rest of the day. And then you're really not going to be learning much the next week anyway. There tends to be a drop in participation in Torah classes the week after Shavuos. Right? And you kind of say, so what's the whole Shavuos worth? What's it worth to stay up the whole night? What was it worth to hear a couple of Lezotar? What was it worth to make an oath of allegiance to Hashem? When you know you're not going to live up, and that's the truth. The answer is it's still worth it. It's still worth it. So notwithstanding what we started, how are you the Shabbos after Shavuos? Are your buns really hot? You're really excited? You know, we're going the other way. Well, it would be nice if you'd still be excited by Shabbos. But even if you're not, and that is for many the case, you know, I'm sure, even, I think ladies, even though they don't step and learn, yeah, Philip is something special about Shavuos. No, something. No? Beyond the cheesecake. Right, if you go to the shul, you hear the Aseres HaDibros, still something, some inspiration. So, although after Shavuos, it might not be so good. It doesn't matter. You had a good Shavuos? It's worth it. You don't know what's going to happen from that good Shavuos. You never know. And that's the important message. With this idea, we can now go through the whole Parsha very quickly. That's the theme of Parsha's Noso. Now, Tolna Rebbe does not say this. I hope I'm not abusing his idea. His idea is an amazing idea, right? Dealing with, so there's all these situations, temporary situations. So now let's take this thought and see if Nusa will fit into this. Okay, imagine you're a Levi, a son of Gershon or Merari. Now, we ended the Parsha with Kahas. Whoa, Kahas, these guys are really special. Kahas gets to carry the Aron. Now, you know what that was? Must be the most amazing thing, because what was the great miracle that happened? That the Levi didn't carry the Aron carried the Levi. Can you imagine that you get the opportunity to pick up the Aron picks you up? Do you realize what spiritual encounter that is? And the Torah answers, we've got to be careful with Levi, we've got to take extra special care, because they have the holiest job, and they could die if they don't have the right kavanas. Whoa, we got to really be careful with them. And then we said, okay, Merari, come on, okay, you guys get to do the boards. That's Gershon, you get to the boards. Merari, you get to the curtains. Like Gam, also. You can imagine, what does a Gershonite or a Merarite think? What's my avoda worth? I don't know, how come he got to do the ark? That guy really is a holy roller. What's my avoda worth, Hashem? So that's why we're starting the Parsha. That don't minimize how valuable it is. Kedusha's in its place and in its time. And we'll start the Parsha with you. Don't look at what others have. Realize that what you have is very important. I think that's not a bad interpretation. So let's go further. That's the theme that goes straight through now. Okay. So now you have the Jewish camp. It's a pretty nice camp. Got millions and millions of nice Jews. Okay, you have a couple mitzvahs there. Now, there's another part I have to tell you. Just like we said, when you're getting bad news, there's a tendency to let the details of the good be washed out. There's another thing. The Tolna Rebbe says the opposite is also true. When things are going amazing, we have a tendency to minimize the bad that's small and overlook the bad that we shouldn't overlook. Let's say, he's talking to Yeshiva Bachram, but let's say you had an amazing day in the Yeshiva today. It was like you mamash didn't bottle a minute. You learned straight. First Seder, 4 hours. Second Seder, 4 hours. Night Seder, 3 hours. It's an amazing day. Everything you did. But Epis, there was one Bachar there. You gave him a sharp vort and you hurt his feelings. It took maybe 15 seconds. 23 hours, 59 minutes, and 45 seconds was mamash kachi kadosh. 15 seconds, you blew it. What's the tendency of the Yetzer tell you? I had a great day. It works the opposite too. The things that you got, but you hurt the guy's feelings. Malbim panei chaveiro barabim. Right? You lose your Elam Haba. 15 seconds. What do you mean? I had a great day, Rosh Yeshiva. I just got fired by the Rosh Yeshiva. I'm going to get to a big yeshiva next. It's amazing. I did everything great. Or I did a lot of chesed today. It was a great day. You look at your day. Wow, it was a great day. Don't be fooled by a great day. And if you did something wrong, it gets overlooked. So you got this Jew as an amazing Jew. Yeah? And he said two words of Lashon Hara. And you got an amazing Klal Yisrael. They're all amazing. You have one Jew who said two words of Lashon Hara. We could tend to ignore it, eh? Get out of the camp. Get out! You're out for a week! Why? It's just nothing. Compared to everything, it's nothing. No. You get out. And all these people who have... Don't minimize. If there's a negative, Don't let it get covered. It goes both ways. Goes both ways. You know, you're learning and learning, and you just a little bit, you're not nizer in Lashon Hara. And Lashon Hara just takes mamish a second, 1 second. But I had such a great day. You got to do it the other way. Sending out people from the camp means don't let the bad be ignored with all the good situation that you're in. And realize how important it is to Hashem. That little bit, you're out of the camp for a week, no clouds of glory, no mun, no nothing. For a week, you're on your own. Now think about how important a little minute is. Moving on. We talked about the law of stealing from somebody. Well, stealing, that's a bad thing. But how about you steal from a convert? Now come on. Who's a convert? Come on, the convert doesn't even have any relatives. The convert isn't anything special. You know, many of the converts, they're mentally not stable because whose normal person wants to be a yid, you know. And, you know, a lot of the converts, I'm not casting aspersions on them. I'm sure your husband can attest to a lot of interesting stories. There are many wonderful converts, but there's some that just, we'll just leave it at that. And you could see, you could think that they're sub-Jewish in a certain way. In a certain way. It's not, if the Torah had to warn us so many times to treat them like everybody else, that means we would not want to treat them like everybody else. If it was so easy to love converts, Torah wouldn't have to keep repeating it, right? Obviously, it's not so easy. So therefore, you hear, I just stole from a convert. He doesn't even have any mishpacha. What's the big deal? Now, we could have put it earlier in Sefer Vayikra, but Naso is where we mamish focus on every little detail of life. Now we repeat it. You know what? It is a big deal. You know why? Because so you could be a mitzvah sometimes for stealing also, you know that. It's not just for Lashon Hara. If you're looking into some interpersonal relationships, sometimes we see, you know, certain people, you're on your best behavior, right? If the Chafetz Chaim walks in, ooh, you're not going to talk in Lashon Hara, you're not going to say anything, you're going to do everything you're supposed to do. You never steal from a Chafetz Chaim, would you? From a convert, you know, you borrowed some money from the convert, you don't pay him back. You say, listen, he's going to die anyway, he has no inheritors anyway. You know what? It was nice enough that we let him be a Jew, so why can't, what are we going to pay him back for? I mean, he's just a little detail of the totality of my life. Hashem says, nothing doing. You know what? You're wondering when you have to do confession for a sin? You think, oh, I better confess if I was Machal Shabbos. Oh, I better confess if I killed somebody. Oh, I better confess if I ate treif. You know what? You better confess if you hurt the feelings of a convert and you didn't pay him back, although he's a goonish in your eyes. That's where we're going to learn vidui from. And you don't know vidui, you're not forgiven at all. And he is important. Just because he happens to be a little nothing in this little place of time in your mind? Nothing doing. Okay, that's why it's repeated over there. Moving on, a person has to give truma to the kohen. So the kohen would say, listen, he's got to give the money anyway, right? And he already is giving 10%. That's a big hit. And he already separated it. This is thousands of dollars. This is thousands of dollars. He's giving to the levy. Thousands of dollars. So what? It's already not his, right? So what does it matter if I take it instead of another kohen? I could grab it. Torah says, no, you can't grab it. What do you mean? He's losing it anyway. Ann says, yeah, but he could decide who gets it. That is, in the scheme of things, isn't that a kind of very small pleasure? Isn't that a small pleasure? I mean, you have to give it anyway. It's not like you have a choice. It's not like, you know, oh, I could decide I want to give tzedakah to an institution, and if I want to, and then I'll get the covet and all these things, you know. Okay, I understand. But here, like, it's like the government is it's your taxes. It's being taken out. So now all your, it's not like, not when you give tzedakah, well, I didn't have to give to this shul, and I didn't have to even give it all. I've already given my meister money. I'm such a wonderful person, such a big act, and this and that. But if the government's already taken your money out of your pocket, it's only a question where it's going to go. That's called tovas hanah. That's a very, very small pleasure. Torah says, but you know what? You can't steal that from somebody either. In the big picture, the guy's been hit for thousands of dollars. What's a little bit of who it goes to that? No, that is his little pleasure, and you can't take that away from him. In other words, how the Yisrael treats the convert with no relatives, don't let the Kohen treat the Yisrael who doesn't have much to decide in terms of giving the money or not. The bitter waters, you could say like this. Look at this woman. Where do you think this marriage is going to go? Where do you think this marriage is going? This marriage is not going anywhere. She's got the black book. She's got the black book. Where is this marriage going? You know what? There could be a wonderful moment here. Now, this woman, as not amazing as she is, not, but she did do one amazing thing. And what was that? At the very moment of seclusion. Now, you can be sure when she had that moment, she checked into the Happiness Hotel and they locked the door. Don't fool us what she was planning on doing over there. Don't fool us. She was in a situation not different than Yosef and the wife of Potiphar. And if at the last minute she backed off, what's it worth? You don't think she's going to get around to him in a couple of weeks from now? Whatever. Doesn't matter. At this moment she rose to the occasion. Let's not minimize it. But what about the Beis Yaakov world who's davening in the statue of a child? That's Hashem's Cheshem, I understand. But you know what? This woman is as bad as she is, but here's a good, beautiful moment, even though it was only for 15 seconds. Don't minimize the beautiful moment, and for that, you're going to get children for that. And even if you're going to get back together, and Hashem is saying, and for that, and to bring some shalom to this family, even if the shalom will only be temporary. Well, you know, I'm Hashem. I'm only going to let my name get erased if I have a guarantee that the shit is going to stay good forever. Then I'm willing to let my name get erased. No, he's willing his name to get erased. Even if it's only for a couple of weeks, they're going to get back together. Even if they only get together for a couple of weeks and she has a child, and then they're going to get divorced anyway, it was still worth it. That, Eisha Sota, is Klal Yisrael. Is Klal Yisrael. That was her moment of Nasa Venishma. If only for a minute, it's Nasa Venishma. It's so good, isn't it? So, and now we go to the Nazir. Same story. What do you know about the Nazir? The Nazir, he's a regular guy. He likes to drink wine. He likes to, you know, cut his hair and look manicured and everything. And, you know, what he said, well, if you see a sota b'kulkula, you know, see the sota being denigrated. Listen, what's he looking at? What's he doing in the base of Mingus when a sota is being denigrated? You know, like, just think about it. You think Rav Steinman would happen to be walking on the Temple Mount when the woman is like that? You know, they stay away. That sota is only a certain part of the Azara. It's not everywhere. And once you see, you get out of there. Like what are you, you know, it's like when you send to somebody this gruesome thing, you know? Oh, take a look at this. I mean, you don't have to see the sota b'kulkula. You follow what I'm saying? You know what's going to happen to the sota b'kulkula, what's going to happen to her dress and everything. I mean, I understand women should be taking a look at that. A Beis Yaakov girl should look at that and say, well, what's the yeshiva boy doing over there? So, big tzaddik he can't be. I'm not saying he's a Russia, but a big tzaddik he can't be. He says, I think I got to be a big tzaddik. I think I got to stay away from wine. Who are you fooling, man? Who are you fooling? You think 30 days from now you're going to be a bigger tzaddik? And for 30 days staying away from wine and all these things and you get away, you know, what's going to happen when you come out of that? Can you imagine? You know, take the alcoholic away from booze for 30 days. What happens when he comes off of the booze for 30 days? He drinks 10 times more, no? What happens when you go on a diet, yeah? You try, you know. Oh, I went on this great diet, lost 25 pounds. What happens? You go off the diet, you gain 60. How'd they gain so much? Because you lost, you gained more. This could be what the Ramban is saying. Ramban is saying, you know what your avera is? Who asked you to be a nazir? Because you went to the other extreme to be a nazir. So what's going to happen when you stop being a nazir? What happens if you take the alcohol away from the alcoholic? You think, well, I'll only have one drink. You're going to binge. You're going to be worse than you started. You're going to be worse than you started. So then why does the Torah have this? It's exactly Klal Yisrael. Why'd you say Nasa V'Nishma? Remember, if the Jews did not say Nasa V'Nishma, it would be no sin to worship a golden calf. A goy is allowed to have hishtatfus. A goy can believe in God and believe in idols. You know that? A goy can believe in an idol and believe in God. He can't. So the Jews, what do we gain by saying, well, we're only going to accept you as Hashem? Now they got themselves in a mess. But it was still worth it. So what are you being a Nazir for? You know what kind of mess you're going to get yourself into? You're going to have to make a Korban Chatas. We already know in advance you're going to bring the Korban Chatas. Is this all exactly Matan Torah all over again? You hear? He's saying, Nasa Vinish. Who do you say Nasa Vinish? You got a black book. You got you're in 30 days. If you'd say you'd be a Nazir for the rest of your life, no, Mela. It's only 30 days or whatever. What's it going to be worth? You know what it's going to be worth? Let's go back to that source. Where is it? 12. You know what it is? You might be right. But va'achar yishte ha-nozir. We ask he's not a nozir, but he'll have a memory of being a nozir. He'll have a memory of being a nozir. He'll have a memory what it was to be a good boy for 30 days. And you know what? Maybe he'll do it again. That's all Matan Torah was. Matan Torah was, can we have a memory of how good it feels to be close to Hashem? If, albeit for just a short period of time. Even though being a Nazir may very well make you sin afterwards. But it's still better than not being a Nazir. Because for that time in the Zeris, you felt something. And maybe in the future you'll feel it again. It's worth it even for this temporary moment. And finally, oh, Birchas Kohanim. What do I need Birchas Kohanim for? Birchas Kohanim, where was the first Birchas Kohanim in the Torah? Anyway, a good trivia question. When was the first time Birchas Kohanim happened? Anybody want to give me an answer? Try it. It's when the Mishkan was erected, the final day, everything happened, and then Aaron, who did the Avoda, he did the Birchas Kohanim. That was the Birchas Kohanim. Now the Torah says, we have Birchas Kohanim. Who can do Birchas Kohanim? Don't just say a Kohen. What am I looking for? Does the Kohen have to be a Rosh Yeshiva? Does the Kohen have to be a Shomer Torah Mitzvahs? Not necessarily. Can the Kohen be even a Shtickel Rasha? Yeah. Here's an interesting story that happened to me many, 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 many moons ago. When I still, a long time ago. Must be at least over 30 years ago. So there's this fellow who, I even remember his name. I haven't seen him in years. So we were trying to be makar of him and this and that. And I wanted to have him come to shul. And then I heard, oh, you're a Kohen. Yeah, oh. Well, if you're a Kohen, you know, you should come to shul. Yontov's coming soon. I'd be honored to get a bracha from you. Guy says, Rabbi, you don't want a bracha from me. I'm not a good Jew. And he starts going through all the things he's doing that's not good. I say, you know what? Just because you're that, you've not been excluded from the privilege of blessing us. He said, really, Rabbi? I said, yes, I would be very honored if you would come to shul, even if he's going to drive to shul, and give me a bracha. He came. He became a Shor HaTorah Mitzvahs. Okay? So now let's think about this. Let's think about this. Birchas Kohanim is saying, any Kohen can give you a blessing, and it carries all the force of Hashem's bracha, no matter who the Kohen is. I figure if Aaron is going to give me a bracha, I'll go. You know, you want to see big tzaddik and get brachas from them, their brachas are worth something. What's this rinky-dink Kohen worth? Here's Kosev Orchu, so all the Kohanim will bless. Every Kohen, even if he's the smallest nothing if Kohen, still they can give a bracha, and it's worth a lot. Because again, at that moment, he's on the Dukhan, he is amazing. Let's not look afterwards if he's worthy for it. And finally, the Nesiim, they could say, listen, I'm not a Kohen, I'm not a Levi. I'm never going to be able to bring Korbanos again. It's a one-off. That's all it is a one-off. And it's just like the other guy. We're all bringing the same Korban. After the sixth or seventh time, how special could it be to Hashem? The answer is, even if you have one time to be able to bring a Korban to Hashem, you'll never, ever be able to. A guy can say, listen, I understand a Kohen, he's going to be in the Kahuna, let him do it. But we're just Yisrals. We're never going to be able to bring a Korban and do the Avoda with the Korban. And be able to do that? That already, that's a nice thing, even if it's only once. So that becomes the message of Parsis Nos. So I hope this is correct. You can ding zich. You can argue on this whole second part. But I think these are the things that we have to realize as post-Shvuos, is that although we may think that we're falling back into areas that were not as great as we were on Shavuos, Shavuos was worth it. It's worth it. And whenever you have one opportunity, it's worth it. And when things are going really good, you start to make cheshbon nefesh and see the things that aren't so good. Because that's what Klal Yisrael is about. That's what Torah is about. Hashem should. So even though our challahs may not be so hot after Shavuos, but take comfort in the fact that you had an amazing Shavuos. And always look for those opportunities where a little situation could be a big thing as well. Okay.